Thank you for bringing it here. However, it's too late.
Oh?
Yes. I mean, our facilities here are not good, and our time for research is limited.
Ah.
Would you like to see what you brought here?
Yes, yes.
You and the others risked your lives for it. Frankenstein's heart, Lieutenant.
Frankenstein? It's still living?
It can never die.
Never?
Frankenstein's story is very old. You never read it?
Yes, I did. But I don't understand.
Well, explain then.
Now it's garbage.
Another movie night.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the show. We are just another movie night. And I'm Scott.
I'm Joe.
Hi, Joe. What are we doing today?
Talking trash.
Talking trash, indeed. This is our show to review, spoil, debate, crap on, and give second chances to the hated, the lowest rated, the much debated, and often forgotten flicks on the internet. Oh, while asking the question, is this the worst movie ever made? And if not, what is? Because here on the show, we truly believe you can't review film unless you know what the worst is. And today we are celebrating a month full of kaiju films, aka movies with big ass monsters in them.
Are they monsters or maybe just a guy in a suit?
You're saying these aren't real?
I'm sorry, Scotty. I'm very sorry.
You son of a bitch.
I hate to break it to you, but yeah, there's an actor in there. Are you going to be all right?
Next, you're going to ruin the Muppets for me.
Kermit has a hand up his ass.
You son of... Oh, my God.
I know. No.
And I'm going to take you to the Fraggle soon.
No.
And you know what? I'm going to ruin that for you, too.
You know what? You know what? Kermit is a real person.
I would have thought so.
The Muppets are real. I 100% believe the Muppets are real people.
This got depressing. I was in such a good mood.
Oh, my God. No. You have to be in a good mood because what we just watched is something.
You sound so happy.
I am happy. I am pretty happy, actually.
Guess what?
What?
Today, or tonight anyways, we are watching a movie with a tagline, "He rolled the seven wonders of the world into one."
What?
We are talking about 1965's Frankenstein Conquers the World, a.k.a. Frankenstein versus Baragon.
Okay.
It has a 5.5 on IMDb from 2,500 reviewers. It's directed by legend Ishiro Honda, who is the director of Godzilla, Mothra, Rodan, and King Ghidorah.
Well, I have a question for Mr. Honda. How come he just didn't call this Frankenstein versus Baragon? Why is it Frankenstein Conquers the World? Why is that?
Because we're going to get into it.
Okay, this is a very confusing situation.
This movie is the first collaboration between Toho Studios and Henry G. Saperstein.
Okay.
He was the head of UPA, United Productions of America, at the time, now known as DreamWorks. They both co-produced this film, that company and Toho. This movie stars Nick Adams as Dr. James Bowen.
So Nick Adams reminds me of Bruno Kirby and Harvey Keitel, like if they had a kid.
That's interesting. You know him from the movies Giant, Rebel Without a Cause, and Invasion of Astro Monster, a.k.a. Godzilla versus Monster Zero, Joe's favorite kaiju.
Oh, my God.
He was also nominated for Best Supporting Actor at the Oscars for his role in Twilight of Honor.
Wow.
I fell down a rabbit hole with every actor in this movie. Let me tell you something. I found out a lot of weird facts. Yeah, he actually, you want to know fun facts about him?
I would love to know, yeah.
It's a little sad. So, you know, he is one of the few actors who enjoyed his work on these films. He actually gave interviews where he talked about how great it was, and seeing the crew, he praised them in a bunch of articles when he came back to America after filming these films, because he did both of them back to back. He came back, he said he made a ton of friendships, but unfortunately, because he did the hardest campaign ever to win an Oscar for his movie, he spent a lot of money and pushed very heavily to try to win that Oscar. And he was very shocked that a person who didn't do any campaigning won the Oscar that year. And he fell into depression and passed away a couple years after this movie.
Oh, no.
Yeah, overdose.
An overdose?
Yeah, very sad. Very sad.
Oh, my God.
A little sad to hear that, especially since he was in one of my favorite, the Godzilla versus Monster Zero, or Astro Monster. That one's actually one of my favorites. At the time, we rewatched a whole bunch of these movies a little while ago, and I was saying how much I enjoyed it because this actor, you know, he played an astronaut. He came back to America, you know, Japan with his, you know, and there was something a little fun about it. And it was one of the Godzilla films that we actually really enjoyed. So seeing him here was a little odd. Well, but
Okay, I have questions. Do you think that it's perhaps that he didn't win the Oscar, but he fell into drugs and destructive behavior?
He was actually taking medicine for a nervous disorder, and he overdosed on it.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. So
he wasn't like a junkie.
No, they do rule it a suicide.
Oh, no.
Yeah, so it's a shame.
Suicide. So okay.
Yeah.
Well, you know how much to take, you know? Like,
yeah.
There's much more to the story here that we didn't get into. There's actually information that might suggest foul play in this story. We didn't get into it a lot here, but you can check it out on crimemagazine.com. They wrote a really interesting article describing the entire case.
I mean, our facilities here are not good, and our time for research is limited. Ha!
He also, he did a Rebel Without a Cause and friended James Dean on that film, and also did Giant with him.
Yeah.
And he had a friendship with him, and when James Dean died, it kind of hurt him, because he started driving terribly, and he was actually on probation for reckless driving.
Oh, so, my God. This is tragic. I can't believe all this.
It's a shame. He's pretty much the one that we recognize.
Well,
for the
he's
most.
The main actor.
Yeah. This also stars Kuni Mizuno as Dr. Tsuko Togami.
She's cute.
She's appeared in 143 projects. Has had a long career with Toho Studios, appearing in movies like Invasion of Astro Monster again, Ibra, Horror of the Deep, a.k.a. the Godzilla flick where he fights a giant crab, and even 2002's Godzilla Against Mechagodzilla and 2004's Godzilla Final Wars. She came back and did those movies.
Oh, my
as well.
God.
She even appeared on the Japanese version of 24.
Wow.
Yeah, I was really interested in finding out that there was a Japanese 24.
Is she still alive?
Yes, she is. Yeah.
She's still alive.
I would say all of the other crew outside of Americans all lived into their 80s and 90s.
Oh, my God. Wow.
This also stars Tadeo, how do you say it? Tadao
Takashima.
Well, that sounds so much nicer when you say it.
Yep.
He plays Dr. Yuzo
Kawaji.
Yes. He was in King Kong versus Godzilla.
What?
Yeah. There's a lot of connections.
Wait, the old King Kong versus?
Yes.
Oh, okay. I was going to say, because there's no way he's still alive. Is he? He's still alive?
I don't think he is.
Let me see. No. Well, ripe old age of 88.
Told you. Oh, this also stars Yoshio Susie-Haye?
Oh.
Haya? No?
I don't know.
No?
You're doing fine.
You didn't like it?
Yoshio Tsuchiya. Tsuchiya. Tsuchiya.
Tsuchiya?
Yeah.
He plays Mr. Kawai?
Kawai, yeah.
He was in Seven Samurai and Yojimbo.
Okay.
He was also an Astro Monster and Destroy All Monsters.
Oh my God. See, once you work for Toho, you're in it.
Yeah. I mean, that's a whole thing here. A lot of these people got hired on and pretty much were under contract.
If Toho asked me in the 1960s if I wanted to be under contract and make 70 films with them, I'd be like, yeah, all you have to do is pay me $5 and feed me.
That's good. It, huh? I'm in. How do you make a career off of that?
You know what? You can. You can. And you'll be voted the cheapest actress in the whole world to get on your movie. And I would do it because I would work for Toho almost for free.
I love it. By the way, this movie, Frankenstein in this film, is not considered a kaiju, but a kaijin, which is a supernatural human-like creature. Thought that was interesting.
Yeah,
that is. But this movie does have Baragon, which is a full-on kaiju.
Yeah.
So, really fun fact here, the West German name, this movie was known as Frankenstein, Terror with an Ape Face.
Oh my God.
I kind of love that. It actually fits this movie better than the other titles. Okay, so here's the crazy stuff now.
Okay. Oh, crazy
stuff. So let's get into the how this movie came about.
Okay.
Because I fell down the rabbit hole in this movie, and I'm fascinated by some of the backstories to these movies.
This definitely threw me for a loop because I didn't know what to expect, but yeah.
So originally, this started with a script written as King Kong versus Frankenstein. By legendary stop motion and special effects pioneer Willis H. O'Brien, known for doing the effects for King Kong and Mighty Joe Young, which he won the Oscar for.
Oh my God.
He had the rights to use Kong. I guess RKO gave him the rights and okay to use Kong.
Wow.
But he couldn't raise enough funding, so he teamed up with a producer, John Beck. But John Beck, behind his back, brought this screenplay to Toho.
Oh,
to try to get more funding. Toho.
Was he just trying to help or was he being a dick?
No, he was being a dick.
Damn.
Yeah, at first I think he was trying to raise funding for it because he actually got a lot of buzz brought up for this movie.
Yeah.
And so he but still couldn't raise the money. So he decided to go overseas. So he got, I guess Toho got interested. Now Toho, Toho secretly only wanted the rights to Kong.
Okay.
So when they teamed up with him, he struck a deal and they turned this script into King Kong versus Godzilla. So the movie King Kong versus Godzilla is actually the screenplay for King Kong versus Frankenstein. They just remove Frankenstein and put Godzilla in it.
That makes sense.
So they use that script. Then O'Brien tried to sue everyone in it. Because it was all him. It was all based off of his script. But he had to drop the lawsuit out of fees and later passed away at 62.
Aww.
So during the fighting of them, it took a toll on him.
Aw, that sucks.
Owning the rights to Frankenstein, Toho wrote Frankenstein versus Godzilla. But then they said, we don't want to use Godzilla. We'll just turn it into Baragon.
Okay, well, how do they own the rights to Godzilla? He's a
universe. Toho, I'm talking about. Toho got the rights to Frankenstein and King Kong.
I'm sorry. Off of the screenplay. Oh, sorry. Yeah, how do they own the rights to Frankenstein, though? It's a universal monster.
Not technically. Technically, universal. It's the. They can't use Boris Karloff's look.
Okay.
That is owned by Universal.
Well, he
kind of
looks like.
The idea of Frankenstein and Dracula is up in. Anybody can use it. It's because it was based off of a book that was written so long ago.
Yeah, all right.
So you could use these things, but when they got this script, they pretty much had Frankenstein, the idea, and they had King Kong. So they went and made two King Kong films, King Kong Escapes and King Kong versus Godzilla.
Okay.
And then they used Frankenstein, which they planned on using Frankenstein a lot, but they kept changing the ideas. And unfortunately, the director of this movie, Honda, he didn't like any of this because he was very fascinated and he really wanted to make good movies, but he was locked in with Toho and they kept rejecting all of his ideas. He wanted to make an actual Frankenstein film and deal with what Frankenstein's really about, the book.
Okay, I gotcha.
So, and by the way, I know we're seeing Frankenstein a lot. We know it's Frankenstein's monster, but we have to drop that because this character has now become known as Frankenstein.
Especially in this movie.
We have to get over it. Yeah, and this movie does that heavily, so we're going to have to move on from that. I read into this director, too. Well, he was like, he wanted to be a serious director, and he had a lot of ideas for serious movies, and the people at Toho kept saying no to him. And so because he was very loyal, he just kept making these movies. He really didn't want to, and in fact, when he was forced to do another kaiju film, he wasn't very thrilled about it. But he kept doing them anyways out of loyalty and also of respect for the special effects artists on these films. So I thought that was really fascinating, like how this movie came about. This movie's crazy, and what's even crazier is there's a sequel. Next week, we're going to be doing the sequel.
Oh, my God. So you just ruined the movie for me. You realize that, right? Because at the end, I'm here thinking something has happened that didn't happen now, I guess.
It's still living?
It can never die.
Well, we're going to talk about it because what happened. We'll get into it now.
All right.
So let's talk out this movie now that I gave you the rundown of the crazy legends behind this movie. And rarely do I find out enough facts that are really interesting. This is one of those interesting movie facts that I'm like, holy crap, this went through some real interesting stuff to get made and get turned into it. This is one of those rare times where you hear that people are like, hey, we're going to make, I think we talked about this on a previous episode. We're going to make Candyman versus, who was it, Leprechaun. Yeah. And they were like, oh, we're shopping this around. Mm-hmm. And that script just gets thrown out. No one's really taking that seriously.
Right.
Here's a movie where the script legends were working on these things. And they kept getting passed around and changed, like, the telephone game. And everybody's backstabbing. And then we get this movie. This is the movie we get.
I know. It's just, it's interesting to me because there's so many kaiju movies out there, and it always impressed me how they keep coming up with the new designs for these kaiju, because this one's, I've never seen this one before.
But unfortunately, this Baragon is what you're talking about.
Baragon
himself is, he looks like Anguirus, which was I think a lot of people don't realize this, but the first kaiju to actually show up to fight Godzilla.
Yes, but Anguirus doesn't have the horn or he doesn't have the floppy ears.
He doesn't have the floppy ears, but he does on all fours, does have a spiky back. He's like a turtle shell.
He does have the horn.
And he does have a horn. So he is almost the same exact design, except here they put the floppy ears on of someone else.
It's possible they just kind of revamped the costume. Yes. They repurposed it.
They are definitely known for that.
Oh, man.
He looks like he has the floppy ears of, I think there's another kaiju that King Caesar, I think, is in one of the movies that oh my God, we got to talk about that movie forever. King Caesar movie, that one's unbelievable. But he has floppy dog ears.
Yeah, these are like elephant floppy ears.
But I'm going to be honest with you. Baragon doesn't matter.
Nope.
Baragon is only in about 5 to 10, maybe, unfortunately, the longest 15 minutes of this movie, probably.
Yeah, it went on a bit.
Yeah, because the rest of the movie, it does not care about Baragon.
No.
Yeah, this movie is about Frankenstein's monster. And to get into the plot or the conversation of breaking down this film, the movie starts with one of the funniest starts of a movie. We are in the World War, and we're in Germany.
We're in Nazi Germany.
And in a castle around an airstrike or a battle zone, and we have what I guess is Frankenstein's castle?
I mean, is it?
I don't know. All I know is that there is a mad scientist who looks like Dr. Wily from Mega Man. Like a really bad knockoff.
He does.
He is packaging up a suitcase and giving it to the Nazis, and we hear a heartbeat.
Oh, they make it known that there's a heart in that case.
Yeah, they tell us straight up. They don't show us, but we hear this heartbeat through the whole thing. It's like the telltale heart. You know, we just hear, oh my God, what is that? And I like that you said to me, does everybody hear it or is it just supposed to be for us? And I'm like, good question.
I mean, because the Nazis, they don't really react. They just like take the case and they're just like, okay, thanks. Yeah,
and that's the most fun part of this film is how people react to things. Because this heart goes on a travel. It goes on a huge We actually go on travel by map with the heart.
It does.
Yeah.
Because it ends up from Germany and then it ends up in Japan.
Yeah. It goes, well, they actually traded off two submarines meet to give, to trade over the heart suitcase to the Japanese. And then right there, the German sub gets blown up. And they go, and the crew members of the Japanese sub, they go, why would they waste it on this? Like, why would they waste an entire submarine and crew for this one case?
Yeah.
I wonder what's in it. So when they get back, we watch this guy deliver from the submarine to a scientist the suitcase, and they open it up, and there is a beating heart inside of like a jar.
It is like hands down the hugest heart of all time.
Yeah.
And so why, whose idea was it to first of all, none of these people are even remotely like taken aback by this. Like, it's a beating heart. Oh. You're not scared or like worried or confused.
In fact, it's the opposite. The one guy who brought it to them is like, is that a beating heart? And he's like, yes, it's Frankenstein's heart. And he goes, Frankenstein? Yeah. Haven't you read the book? And he goes, yeah. I have. But I didn't know
it was real.
He didn't even say that. He just goes, huh, but I didn't even take it into account that it's possible.
Frankenstein's heart, Lieutenant.
Frankenstein? Is still living?
It can never die.
Never?
Frankenstein's story is very old. You never read it?
Yes, I did. But I don't understand.
And then he's like, well, it is possible. Frankenstein can't die.
Oh, my God.
And that his heart is ever living.
Okay, so then here's my first question I was going to ask you. So if that's the case and he can't die and he has regenerative abilities.
Does he?
Why is his heart there? Where's the rest of his body? What is happening?
I mean, well, if
did it get incinerated in the bomb? And his heart survived.
Oh, well, you jumped ahead too far. Are you talking about originally before the heart left Germany, or are we talking? Are we speeding?
No,
forward?
At Hiroshima.
Well, you're speeding forward then, because I would ask you, where's his body from Germany?
True. That's true. Maybe it because there's so much war happening that it got incinerated from a bomb. Well, they never even tell us.
It's not from a bomb, but if you're taking account how Frankenstein died in the movie. Or the book.
Oh, well.
Because in the movie, you know, they get burned and the castle falls on him, the windmill or whatever.
Yes, but he doesn't get burned.
The windmill was burning and then he fell into it, right? And we found out in a next movie, in the Universal movies anyways, that he was frozen in ice.
Yeah, he was frozen in ice.
Which never made sense to me, but I was like, I'll go along with
it. Yeah, it does, because the castle was destroyed. So if he was there in like stasis and it got cold, he would have probably frozen.
Stasis.
You know,
it was underneath a windmill. Why is there like an ice chest under there? Where is this cavern?
You know, anyways, you're gonna have to ask the director of the movie.
Let's just say that's what happened, and somehow he was destroyed, and then his heart was the only thing. Because I think in the book he was in Antarctica or something. Doesn't he chase Victor?
I don't remember.
Anyways, yeah, so the heart travels. Now, the problem is they're going to do surgery on it. They're trying to, they say, and now this is what they're telling them, that they think this is going to save everybody in the war because it can regrow and it's ever living. And if they can figure it out, they can save everybody and keep them alive.
You're joking.
I'm afraid not, Lieutenant. Living cells consist of protein. This heart lives on as if it forgot to die, feeding only on protein. If we could just solve this mystery, lives could be saved.
But what does that even mean? So what can you draw from a heart? I mean, it's not...
Well, they have to figure out the DNA or the cells of what's keeping it alive, right?
I guess. I mean, yeah. But just the idea that nobody is even bothered by this thing. This is... They put it in a tank. So... But what happens to the scientist that...
Well... That's the thing I was going to say. Well, first off, before we go on to that, I just want to point out also in this universe, she wrote this book.
Yeah.
And so we're going to take into, that's an autobiography. Like, she wrote someone's autobiography. Like, this isn't some kind of fake story she came up with. It's not some ghost story, some, you know, scary story that she came up with. She wrote someone's Victor Frankenstein and Frankenstein's monster. She wrote the autobiography, and then this got passed around the world, and everybody read this book and was like, no shit. Yeah. But here's my question to that. If they already have in that book how they brought him, the Frankenstein made him, then why don't they just replicate that? Why do they need a heart? Because they know it's electricity. It's
right. Well, they would just have to get a cadaver and put it in there and do what Victor Frankenstein did.
Exactly. So my question is, why go through all this trouble?
Right. It seems useless.
They already have a blueprint in a book.
Yeah.
Well, it doesn't matter because they drop the bomb on them and everybody is killed during this experiment.
But the heart, it survives.
Well, apparently we just kind of jump 15 years and then we're going, the heart's just, I imagine it like an airplane when the heart's jumping around on the table while he's on the phone.
Just this heart. So
they made it worse because they radiated it.
Okay. What they want us to buy here in this movie, and it's, you know, whatever, we buy it because we have no choice, but this heart is filled with radiation and had survived the bomb, but it somehow not only survived, but also grew itself into a human being.
Over 15 years, we're guessing that the radiation combined with the heart, which they say has regenerating properties.
Okay.
That all of Frankenstein's cells are regenerator. They can all regenerate.
Okay. So this heart grew a human boy.
What? And that's a little... Where we're a little confused, right?
Because it was radiation.
What we find out next is like, we just start seeing that there's a caveman looking boy just all of a sudden in Japan.
Yeah.
And we kind of get introduced some to our main characters, but we keep seeing this boy like staring from the darkness or whatever. And we're like, I think you didn't even think it was a thing yet.
No, he just looked like he looked like a caveman, to be honest. Yeah,
and then, I mean, not once do you think to yourself, oh, this is Frankenstein?
No. No.
This is the monster?
No.
It's like, no.
I just thought that he was like, there's a couple of scenarios happening in this movie, like, before I actually knew the plot, is that I thought that he was, like, being held captive or something. He was, like, a little boy that his parents died and he's trying to live on his own. Or that he's, like, mutated. Because he didn't look right. He definitely didn't look right. He looked like a Cro-Magnon man or something.
Yeah,
And he didn't look right. So I was like, all right, what is happening here? But I did not find out until later that he was grown from this heart.
And I don't even think it's specifically said. We just started talking about it. We started saying out loud, wait a minute, is this him?
No,
is
the doctor the does say it. He says it at one point that the heart was irradiated and it grew exponentially and formed human body parts and organs, and it's still growing exponentially.
You would like to know whether or not the creature at Hiroshima was formed from Frankenstein's heart, no, Doctor? Isn't that right?
It is.
Frankenstein was actually murdered many times, and yet science found that, surprisingly enough, his body always has come to life again. His heart, however, has never died. Towards the end of the war, we discovered that if the protein supply is sufficient, the body is quickly restored by the active work of the cells. You'd say Frankenstein's arms were cut off. New ones would grow on again.
So he's growing at a rapid rate.
This is one of the things that confuses me. Because why wasn't the heart already growing?
Well, it was fucking huge when they put it in that tank.
But then my question is, if this movie is posing the fact that once it grows a body, the body starts growing really quickly.
Yeah,
why doesn't the heart, why wasn't the heart growing the whole time? Why wasn't the being growing around it already growing?
That's true. I can't answer that.
It's kind of odd because the movie seems like it skips forward a lot, but what we find out is that, no, he's aging rapidly.
Yeah.
Like, he's growing in size. I wouldn't say that mentally he's growing or anything like that. He's just expanding. Like the whole creature is just growing up.
Yeah. Well, he gets chased off the property from this farm owner, and this the doctor is walking by, which she's our main girl, Dr. Suiko, and she stops the farm guy, and the farmer's like,
it's not even a farmer, it's just a regular next door neighbor.
Like a next door neighbor. And like he's like, oh, he's eating my chickens or something.
His dog.
Oh, he ate his dog.
And ate his dog and ran across the street with its body.
Yeah, he ate the dog, and so he ran across the street, and so Suiko is like, oh my god, he needs help. So obviously she's going to be the sympathetic one. It's going to be like, you know, King Kong.
That motherly figure, Kong. Which, when you see that this was based off of scripts that were from King Kong,
yeah,
you really see all these little things. There's so many hints that this was either going to be a Godzilla movie or King Kong and Frankenstein.
Yeah, you can totally see it. But like, yeah, so we know that she's the sympathetic one. So we see her back at her lab with this, with the other doctor, Dr. Bowen. They're together. I guess they're together. They're always holding hands.
They seem like it. He's cooking burgers inside of her house. I mean, he's got an American chef hat
and an apron.
And I was like, what, did he send this? Did he send for this to get shipped to him? Like, what's going on?
I mean, well, I guess you can get that stuff.
He was a part of working on the bomb and now feels sympathetic toward it being created. And he wants to focus more on saving people from any of these to happen in the future. He wants to make sure that things like this don't keep happening. So he's trying to help people in Japan by figuring out how they can stop radiation and stuff like that. So there's like two male scientists and our one female scientist. And it's kind of odd what she does and what they all do. They seem to work on this stuff. What I love is that he like stays at her house. Well, she has him over. There's like a scene which we were laughing about. I think it happens around here where he shows up in a kimono. Right? Not a kimono. Is it a kimono?
Yeah, it's a kimono.
He shows up in a kimono with flowers for her, and he says, happy birthday, and he gives her flowers. And then she's like, great, I have a whole dinner table that I just made of food for you. Right?
That's it to you. I'm like, what the fuck is she cooking for him for? It's her birthday.
I was taken back. I was like, wait a minute, did she cook on her own birthday? And I was like, no, that couldn't have been. And my mind went to, oh, they ordered out. And I was like, wait a minute, what year is this? Never mind.
No, they didn't order out.
But they go to eat. And these are one of the things I like is she's like, are you going to stay? And he's like, nah, I'm going to go back home. I think there's more stuff I have to do at home, like scientifically. And I was like, wait a minute, are they together or are they not? Well, it doesn't matter. Fate steps in and you hear like a crash with a car outside. So they go and look over the balcony and a cab driver has hit a child in the street. And he just takes off. That's
funny. But like, I mean, he gets out of the cab and he's just like, oh, okay. And then he gets back in the cab and drives away. Like he looks at him and he's like, oh, okay, I hit you. And he dips. He just gets in the car and drives away. And the kid's like sitting in the street.
In the pouring rain.
In the pouring rain. And so what does she do, Suiko? She throws a bag of bread
at him. Looked like hot dogs and bread. That's what it looked like to me.
Okay, we're in Japan. It's not freaking
little cocktail weenies and bread.
It's not cocktail weenies.
I hope it wasn't bread.
It looked like a loaf of bread.
I felt like she wrapped up a whole bunch. Because I'm talking about when she cooked dinner, there was like 18 plates of food.
Yeah, but do you think it's weird like he was like following her or something? Like he was already obsessed with her because he was outside her window. What are the chances of that? So automatically, I feel like he was like already obsessed with her.
This movie could be called like a coincidence, right? Because like this movie, everything happens by like bullshit, you know, like facts. Because I think it's only the only reason that he's even near her is because he's eating in that neighborhood. For some reason, he traveled here. From wherever the radiation, the bomb went off in Hiroshima. They keep saying Hiroshima. So he's traveled from there this whole time and just so happened to end up near her. That's the only reason. He's not following her specifically. He found the dog. Then he was like in the, I guess, looking for more food and got hit by a car. That's it. It's just happening by circumstance.
Well, they make it their mission to like, to trap him because they want to study him. Because he's like, I mean, what's, there's something up with him. Like he's, he doesn't look like a normal child.
But true. But the best part about that is instead of going out there, two scientists who can help a kid who got hit by a car, they just throw them food. And then they shut the curtain and they peek out of the curtain a little bit just to see if he gets up and eats it. And he does. And then he runs off. And they're like, okay, that's fine. That kid's probably going to die. He got hit by a car. And they just go back to their meal. Now, the only reason they fall into it again is another happenstance, is that they're walking on the beach holding hands and they see a bunch of people freaking out and looking at a cave.
Here's the thing that bothers me about this scene is where did all these children come from? Okay, so we had like army guys. There's like no other
army guys. They're the police.
Okay, well, whatever. They're the police. They have on those outfits that look like our military.
They had weird
police outfits. So the police are there and there's like all these children with no adults, like no parents anywhere. And they're climbing ladders trying to get to this cave where they see the boy. He's hiding in the cave. And so what is your goal when you get there? He's obviously violent. He doesn't trust you. He's growling at you. What is your plan? You literally have no means to trap this person at all. And these children are going up there.
Well, the movie also thinks the same way as you because the movie has no idea what's going to happen next because they just see that the woman leads him toward her a little bit and then it just fades into a next scene.
Yeah, so they have captured him. He trusts her, but like they start off by like treating him as though he's some sort of like refugee. They feed him, they put him in a nice outfit, and they let him watch TV, and he's getting talked to by reporters and other scientists and stuff, and he can't talk, but I mean he's obviously taken with this Dr. Suiko.
Because she's nice and she gives him food.
She's nice and, yeah, she feeds him. But the thing is that he's getting bigger, like, fast. And they put him, they can't accommodate him anymore.
He also gets kind of violent because he gets scared by the TV and he throws it out the window. And one of the craziest scenes, we did not know where it was going to go, was that she went over to calm him down. But then he starts staring at her chest and looking like he's going to rape her. And we got really scared about it. Yeah,
I was like, oh no.
So did the other doctor because he hits him in the head with a chair. And it turns out that this kid doesn't care.
He's not affected by anything. He just wants her necklace.
It wasn't her chest he was looking at. It was their necklace.
Just like the shiny necklace.
And he goes, and I love the scientist who hit him with the chair, goes, we're friends now. He's like, just hit me with a chair, bro.
He's putting him in a cage, okay? Which is what she calls, what does she call it? A cell or something where like he'll be safe from hurting himself.
This scene.
But he's literally growing so big. Like he's huge. And they're not even like worried. Like they know that he has survived radiation. He is pure radiation.
Yeah. Well, he's not radiating anybody else, but he seems to absorb radiation. And that's what they're doing these tests and they're talking about. They're like, he absorbs the radiation. Like that's what's key. It's like feeding him. And that's the only reason he's growing out of control. They say, they actually go, I'm not even kidding. They go, oh, you know, I heard a story once. I think about Frankenstein. The guy who in the beginning, who took the heart to the scientists, he's alive. He left Hiroshima before the bomb went off and he actually comes back. And he goes...
In the most useless scene in the movie.
Well, no, not useless because he's the one that goes, hey, I just wanted to come and tell you. I saw you guys on the news and I went, hey, you know what? That's Frankenstein. And I remember... And he goes, you know, I was sitting there and I went, oh yeah, I had almost forgotten about the time that I had Frankenstein's beating heart.
I understand they found a child who resists radiation.
Yes, this boy here can resist it. I was just reading all about it, as a matter of fact.
You said in Hiroshima, sometime during the last war, you saw a heart that wouldn't stop beating.
Ah, I almost forgot about that incident. The heart, no doubt, was destroyed with the rest of the city.
Yeah, so he's supposed to be the doctor, but he doesn't tell us anything, like what happens to the rest of
He's not a doctor. He's just a military guy.
No, the guy that had the heart, right? He was a scientist. He's supposed to be Frankenstein.
No, okay.
No,
that guy's not Frankenstein. Frankenstein, Victor Frankenstein's dead at this point.
Okay.
But that was another guy. You're talking about the German? No, I'm talking about the submarine guy that brought the heart.
Oh, okay.
He brought the heart to the doctor in Japan, and he actually comes into the movie and he goes, I just love that he says that. He literally says, oh, I almost forgotten. And I was like, how could you almost forget that you saw a live beating heart from Frankenstein's monster?
Yeah.
You don't forget that. That's not something that just goes, oh, what'd you do today, honey? You know, I made some lunch, you know, I sat around, I watched some soaps. What'd you do? I saw Frankenstein's beating heart. Like, it's not like the secondary thing you say to somebody. It's automatically, I'm calling everybody. I found Frankenstein's beating heart today. I'm going to tell every single person I know about it. Yeah, he actually goes, oh, I saw you on the news, and I was thinking to myself, I remember that, and I almost forgotten. So I wanted to remind you that I know who you have. That's Frankenstein. That's the only option. Because when I brought the heart to the people in Hiroshima, they got blown up afterwards. I'm thinking it grew back. I think it grew a person. And they're like, holy crap. And I love the other doctors. They go, they don't even go, bullshit. They go, you know what? It's Frankenstein. I know all about it because I read that book.
Mm-hmm. So it's a real thing. A real thing in the real world.
They start going around trying to investigate it a little more, and they actually go to that doctor that you're talking about, the mad scientist in the opening who got the heart in the suitcase.
Oh, the mad scientist. Okay.
So, yeah, he's just a random dude. He just shows up for like one or two lines, and he goes, yeah, it was totally Frankenstein. And they're like, okay,
it's like, case okay, closed. Thanks. But no case one closed, makes he's reference Frankenstein. That he's like literally growing at such a rate that like they can't contain him anymore. And the press is like all over his biz.
Oh.
And they like want to like be in his face all the time.
You reminded me what that crazy scientist from Germany actually tells them. He goes, yeah, you know what? All of his cells grow back. If you cut them into all the pieces, all of the things live.
Okay. Right?
And then he goes, the only way to know if it's true or not is to cut one of his limbs off. And the other doctor goes, yeah, okay, I'm into that. So he comes back and he actually tells the scientist, he goes, I think we have to cut his arm off.
Cut off the monster's arms or legs. If it is Frankenstein, new arms or legs will grow. And the severed limbs also will remain alive. Have I helped you any?
2 minutes later.
I'd have to cut off a leg or an arm.
What?
If a new arm or leg grows in again, he's the Frankenstein monster, no doubt about it.
Doctors, I won't let you conduct this test.
What other means can we use?
Okay, here's the thing about this. This is another thing. So he obviously can regrow his limbs. So where is, like I said, he just has a heart. He's just, where's the rest of his body that should have grown back? With the bomb, I guess it just got incinerated, but the heart lived. Okay, fine. Whatever. We'll just overlook that.
Well, like I said, the heart absorbed the radiation.
Okay.
From the bomb.
All right. Well, I'll accept that. I'll accept that.
I mean, it's ridiculous regardless. What about it?
But none of these people are even thinking like doctors and scientists. Like, why would you, like, you're going to cut this guy's arm off?
Yeah. The first thing to do is cut. He's going to, oh, you know what? We should definitely take in hand.
Maybe like the tip of grows a back. Pinky.
Yeah,
maybe,
or a piece of skin or maybe, fingernail.
Yeah, maybe take, or you could maybe take one of his teeth out, see if it grows back or something.
Yeah. The fact that they're going to jump that far and go, just cut a limb off.
Yeah, let's just cut his leg off.
That's normal. Like, that's something to do. Not take a sample of anything like his blood or skin, because if we're assuming that this creature can grow back, his heart can grow an entire body around it, then I would assume that a drop of blood might be able to create a second.
Right, for sure.
I think I've had the same problem or idea in my mind of Deadpool.
Yeah.
I kept going, well, what if Deadpool got his head cut off? Would his head grow a body?
Yeah, I would
think so. Would there
so.
Be two Deadpools? And I mean, when would that end?
Doesn't he grow his, like, baby feet or something?
That's what I'm saying. His limbs grow back, but why don't his limbs grow new bodies?
True.
It's a weird, like, painting themselves in a corner. There's no way you could figure out that logic there.
No, actually, I'm gonna take back what I said, because he does have a missing tooth in his head.
You're right, he does.
His front tooth is missing. So obviously he can't regenerate his teeth.
But then as the movie goes on, his teeth get weirder looking. They start getting more and more sticking out.
Yeah, like they look like monster teeth. Like,
I'm guessing what they're saying is that he had baby teeth that are being pushed out and then he's growing new teeth.
Okay, but the front one never grows back in. So how do you explain
that? I thought it did. I thought at the end he had a whole line of teeth.
No.
Because they're getting older actors as the movie goes on. There's definitely four different actors. There's like a young version, then there's a teenager version, and then there's the one at the end.
So there's a separate...
He's definitely an older guy because he has chest hair. Like a lot.
Okay, but that's not real.
That chest hair was fake?
Yes.
I thought I saw it underneath.
He looked like a Sasquatch. No, that wasn't real. That was fake. They put that hair on him. I think they're using the same actor to play him as a teenager and an older adult.
I think so.
First of all, that hair was 1,000% fake. It looked like
fur. Yeah, of course. He's got a fake brow and the whole thing. Well, anyways, one of the funniest things happens is that the scientist who came to him and says, oh, yeah, by the way, that might be Frankenstein's heart. He goes back to what his other job is, which is working near an oil rig, apparently. And they, during this, they're just chilling out. And all of a sudden, everything collapses and there's like an earthquake. But then, of course, in kaiju fashion, a creature emerges and just kind of pokes his head out of the little models that are falling into the ground.
He was under the concrete, though.
He's full on under the ocean. Like, I don't know what's going on.
Literally in the earth's core?
Yeah, I guess. And how something that big wouldn't make, like, the ocean, like, if he's ripping holes. Doesn't matter. He peeks his head out. We don't really see what it is. And that's it. And then we don't go back to this for a very long time.
He doesn't come back for a while.
I kept saying, when are they going to go back to this guy?
They just forgot that happened?
And how come no one's talking about a creature just devastated everything? And there's multiple witnesses.
Yeah.
So doesn't matter. We go back and now we keep seeing that they have him in a cage and the people who are running the scientists, like the office, they're saying, maybe we should put him in a zoo because he's getting so big. We don't know how to handle it. But there's like the whole moral dilemma. He is a human being. Like we can't do this, but I still want to cut his hand off really bad. And they're like, I thought you called him a human being. Yeah, but it's science. They keep doing that in the movie a lot. Yep. They keep saying, it's science. Maybe it's okay.
You objected to the idea of a zoo. You insisted that he was human then.
Yes, I did. Though he's not like a human, not really. He's more gorilla.
I can't agree, Doctor. Why, I recall Frankenstein was human.
A man-made creature. He was put together.
He had a heart. And he always thought like a human, and that's what he was.
In this case?
Let's think it over a little while longer. It'll be terrible if we've made a mistake.
5 minutes later.
As a scientist, I didn't want him to be killed.
But we've saved his hand. As you already heard, at least I have that for my research project. After all Frankenstein's done, he'll be killed for it, I know. It's inevitable. But I'm willing to accept it.
But they do have him in a giant cell. And now, I don't know if you got this. But as he's growing in this movie, for the first half, his clothes are also getting bigger.
Okay. Yeah. I did notice that his clothes are getting bigger. So they had to make a decision.
Yeah, at one point, they finally decide. Yeah.
To strip the clothes. But
he has a building size shirt on at one point.
Yeah, he does. And, you know, I got to say, for 1965 or whatever, I think they do a pretty good job of making him appear bigger than everything else. You know, like,
it's trying.
A little bit of trickery. They're trying.
He definitely has the fun job of running around a big city.
Yeah.
Which is kind of fun. They built these big buildings around him, and he seems to be doing a good job of it.
Yeah.
And it's kind of when there's like a part where, well, let's get to it. He breaks out. But the way he breaks out is that the guy who wants to cut his hand off is secretly going to drug him and cut his hand off. So he, for some odd reason, an entire camera crew shows up of a bunch of idiots.
Who the hell called them?
I don't know where they came from, why they show up, but they put spotlights on him.
And he freaks out.
I would too.
He kicks a cage over and kills them.
Which we didn't even know. I kept thinking to myself, I wonder if they're all dead. And then they do show their bodies underneath the bars.
They're just literally like sitting there with their eyes open, but they're dead.
Yeah, except for the guy who's going to cut his hand off. He got away.
He was the guy I wanted to survive because I liked him.
Did you? He was the guy who randomly throughout the movie goes, I think he's a person, but I do want to cut him up.
Well, he was a good guy.
Multiple times he goes,
he wasn't.
I love that there's a scene in this movie where he goes, I brought bombs because I do now think he's not a human, and I think I need to blow him up.
I agree with those who say they should kill him. However, I think they would kill him by using bombs and shells, Doctor. All our labors would be lost then. I would like his heart and brain intact for research. Then we can continue in a way to study him.
But how can you do that? You'll be killed.
If I attack the point he's weakest, I won't be. I'll get his eyes. These chemicals will do it. My idea is to completely blind him with them.
Isn't that crueler than killing him outright?
It's the only way to get his brain and heart. You already know he's going to be killed. And how he'd be killed should the army do it. So I must do it, Doctor.
And I was like, damn, this guy's changing quick.
Well, there's a scene that happens where I had no idea that this had happened and how. But when he kicks the cage open and runs away, he somehow does lose his hand.
So, yeah, they set up earlier in the movie that he has these, like, chains on his hands. Like, these, they're padlocked.
Yeah.
And I'm guessing that we didn't see it, but it's like, how did he rip the chains out? But he is enormous at this point. So I don't even know how that chain is still there. They actually reference it. Is it too tight? And when they show it, it's like, you can see that the skin around it is like flapped up in the air, but the monster doesn't care because he's eating and he's always happy to eat. And by the way, that's a thing too in this movie, that he's so like the generation that he keeps like growing, he needs to eat.
Yeah.
He needs to get like proteins.
It's the protein that's making him grow. We find that
out. Well, it's the radiation. But yeah. The proteins are helping feed the cells. It's helping him.
Yeah. So he tries to. So I didn't realize this, but I guess he ripped his own hand off when he tried to get out of the shackles.
Apparently.
And so the scientists run in and they see the fucking hands crawling around.
Yeah, some woman screams and they go down. Oh, maybe, and we were laughing that. Did they leave the bodies there as well? They didn't notice a giant hand crawling around?
Oh, I know. And the bodies were gone. So somebody came in there. So none of the cops noticed that the hand was crawling around, which is amazing. So the scientists grab the hand and they take it back to the lab and they put it in a protein bath.
Yeah.
To see if it'll like regenerate a body.
Yes.
I was like, oh my God.
So because Frankenstein's monster went on a rampage, the army and the government are kind of like, well, we got to kill this thing. And they're like, oh, we can't kill it. We need it for science. And the one guy we were talking about who you said you like, he keeps saying things like this. I shit you not. He says in the movie, I don't know. He's a human being. But at least we got that hand back at the office. And he goes, yeah, we got that hand. And then they get back to the, and that, like that's setting something up. Because when they get back to the office, the hand, they go, it's gone.
We'll just have to go home. It's more than we can handle now.
Yes, we better go. We still have his hand. We mustn't forget that. We'll be able to continue our research.
1 minute later.
Is anything wrong?
I'm afraid there is. The hand is gone.
Gone.
Since when? Since this morning.
The protein's gone, Dr. Bowen.
We have to try to find that hand. Look for it.
It crawled. Okay, so it sucked up all the protein juice.
Because it's growing as well.
It's growing, but then it dies because it runs out of protein. So the hand is basically just dead and it's not going to be sprouting a new human.
But how did it get out of its bath? How did it crawl in? And the best part is it's in a grate. It actually snuck into the sewer system.
I know. Well, he went there to die in peace.
He was like, let me get out.
Yeah, I don't know.
To the protein I go.
I don't know what that situation was.
And he's like, ah, damn, I don't have a hand anymore. I guess now I'm into killing the monster to get another piece. Because we have to research it for humanity's sake.
There's a lot of dancing in this movie. A lot of people are having a good time with their yacht rock music and dancing and having like a party. And this happens many times. So it happens in the mountains in some kind of resort where they're all dancing in their like log cabin. And then it happens at this scene, which is the yacht. So they're having a literal yacht rock party. And our guy, Frankenstein, just comes out of the water and just starts scaring the shit out of these people for no reason. He doesn't do anything.
Yeah, he doesn't do anything. And then he just sinks slowly back into the water.
It's so weird. Like, what is the reasoning of this? Like, just so everyone can see him?
I think they're trying... I don't know. I'm going to guess here. I think the movie's trying to set up an idea that he's hungry, but he can't bring himself to kill humans.
Okay, well, there's an ocean full of fish.
I was thinking, I'm guessing that's why he's underwater constantly.
I'm trying to make logic out of this silliness, but so they're on the hunt for him, and they actually show his hand. His hand has grown back. So it looks a little,
But not once cakey, do I remember a nub of any kind.
No, it looked like he had both his hands, but that could have just been a film flub. But so now they're like, it's a race for time because they have to find him and secure him because he's huge. He's a freaking monster. He's like as big as Godzilla now.
Yeah. Well, not as big as Godzilla, but big enough. He's not that big.
He's pretty big.
I feel like way so smaller than Godzilla.
But he had to strip his clothes because he...
Yeah, we don't even know where he randomly gets... He gets like bear skins on him.
Oh, well, you know, he could have easily killed the animal, but.
Yeah, but that was like 50 bears. Like, how many animals could he have killed to get that?
He's taking a sewing class.
Yeah. He knows how to do everything, by the way. He makes fires. And I kept going, but that fire would be gigantic and people would see the smoke.
Right.
And he also, there's like a lot of scenes where the things kill little funny models.
Yeah.
Of animals, like little moving animals, and he like hunts a boar. But at the same exact time, we finally see Baragon again. And Baragon sneaks up, and then the whole thing is that one of the other dance parties, Baragon attacks it at night. And he devastates. Man,
these people just want to fucking dance. Like, leave them alone.
Everybody who's dancing is in trouble in this movie. And it's always you said yacht rock, but that's like that surfer dancing, that like beach party.
Yeah,
bingo.
It is. It's like, you know, like Frankie and Annette.
Yes.
Like that. Like, you know, everyone's on the beach in their bikinis. And
yes.
Just, yeah.
But Baragon definitely destroys this village. And now one of the weirder thing is when they show the village, it's devastated and all the people got away, but they're not anywhere to be seen. Making the local authorities and the scientists who just show up at this area say it was Frankenstein and there are no survivors, so he must have ate them all. And I'm like, nobody went to the local authorities or went to the next door neighbors and said a giant monster just ate the entire village.
That's true. I mean, there was no body parts or anything.
Nobody's there.
But they did collapse. I mean, he collapsed the whole place. I mean, it was a freaking hot mess. It was really bad.
Yeah, and we were laughing about this. I made a joke during the movie, like, don't ignore the giant paw prints. Because they're thinking it's Frankenstein, but he would have big footprints.
He would have, like, dinosaur footprints, for real. So,
which one? Frankenstein?
No, Baragon.
Baragon.
So, like, you could look at that and be like, yeah, that's clearly not a man.
Yeah, that's clearly not Frankenstein. But nobody believes it, and everybody thinks it's Frankenstein. And this goes on a couple more times. I think Baragon shows up and eats animals. Like, there's a part where he's got chicken feathers coming out of his mouth, which made me laugh. He's so big, though, the chickens would be nothing.
Right.
But, yeah, and so...
Popcorn chicken.
They kind of say... The only reason this... Yes, popcorn chicken.
See myself out of it.
The only reason the scientists don't think it's Frankenstein is because they're like, he couldn't have traveled that quickly. But they do find him hiding in a cave and they kind of like go after him and chase him out. But and that's the guy who saw Baragon finally shows up and says, hey, you know what?
I forgot to tell everybody, but our oil rig, that the refinery that we're working at, got attacked by a giant monster who like burrows under the ground. And so I think that's what it really is. I don't think it's Frankenstein. I think it's this new creature, this kaiju. So they go around and they try to talk to the scientific community and get them all to agree. But the scientific community keeps going, "You're an idiot."
It's crazy. There's a shadowy creature that disappears and reappears across a hillside. Unless you can show us a few pictures, I can't use this story. No one can say for certain that your theory is absolutely impossible. But on the other hand, I can't accept a theory that's implausible. I think your idea is entirely ridiculous.
No one thought my ideas made sense. They all thought I'd gone crazy.
I don't believe in your theories. You're a quackpot. Like every single one of them. Although he's got lots of facts to back it up. He's like, I think it's from this period of time. And I think they hid in the earth while the earth froze over. And then they hid under there to come up after
it got
warm.
How would he fucking know?
He's got all these ideas. He's also pointing out that his horn glows.
Well, it does.
I guess that's what helps him burrow. But we ever get any of these facts. And also, we thought this was setting up the idea that Frankenstein would see it and get attracted to it, because we know he likes shiny things. That doesn't matter either.
We don't get any backstory on Baragon. Like, we don't really get anything.
He just happens to show up.
He just shows up from, like, the Earth's core.
Yeah.
And peeks out his head and is like, "Hey, oh, I'm here. Let's start some biz."
Yes.
And
then he looks like a puppy dog.
He just wants to freaking fight. And so
he doesn't want to fight. I think he's just looking for food as well.
Well, I mean, he wants to just tear shit up, really. is what he wants to do.
So
he's a kaiju.
The gang, they go, "No one believes us, whatever. We got to go out into the woods and see if it's true." And that's where our guy's like, "You know what? I brought some TNT because now I think I should kill Frankenstein." So he's like, "Check it out." And he tosses one in to let it explode. And by the way, everything is in green screen. Like old school green screen, so everything looks like crap. Humans on terrible shaking screens.
Terrible, yeah. When he throws the dynamite, what do you think throwing a dynamite would do in a forest? It would cause a fucking fire.
It would cause a fire. It's crazy because it's like 50 fireworks go off when he does it too. Yeah. I don't even know what kind of weapon it is, but the only thing it really does do is it just makes Baragon show up. Baragon's like, "Motherfucker, I was sleeping. Like, I'm pissed off now." So he comes up and attacks them, and Baragon's going a little nuts. And they, because of this, they're in jeopardy. Frankenstein also somehow has like know-how that this is happening.
Yeah, I don't know how he could even track this, but he was in the forest too. So I mean, hey, why not? But, like, he sees that his buddies are in danger, you know, his Sueko. And she kind of is like the Fay Wray character in this, you know, from King Kong.
I would say the guy who wants to cut his hand off. He's the Fay Wray for some reason.
I mean, because, you know, he gets hurt and Frankenstein comes over and literally picks up his body and...
Saves him. Brings them to the others.
And then we get what seems like 20-minute long... fight with Frankenstein and Baragon.
It's a pretty horrible wrestling match.
It is a terrible wrestling match. Terrible.
I said to you, what I feel really bad for is the actor who has to play Baragon, because he's crawling around on his hands and knees.
Yeah.
In a suit where you can tell he can't see shit.
He can't see shit. I think in this particular 20 minutes of the movie, I think that the actor playing Frankenstein was just advised to guide him, just shake him around. Looks like he's killing him.
Yeah. I'd say his motivation is chuck trees.
Yeah.
On Baragon over and over. I don't even know what Frankenstein thinks is happening here, but it literally goes on and on. He keeps chucking a rock, running away, hiding in the tree, ripping up a tree and throwing it at him.
The whole forest is on fire, by the way.
Yeah, because he finally does, like, okay, he's finally going to get a weapon. He gets two trees on fire. Mm-hmm. And he, like, tries to, like, hit him, but Baragon's shooting, like, some kind of radiation ray out of his mouth.
Yeah.
It doesn't do anything either.
No, not at all, because he's basically Frankenstein is radiation.
Exactly.
So why would it hurt him? It makes no sense.
I don't know, but all he manages to do is set the whole forest on fire and surround them in a forest fire while they're wrestling.
And so out of nowhere, the earth starts collapsing.
Before that happens, my favorite bit of this is a bunch of cops show up because, like, the whole thing is on fire. And they show up and they go, they don't see two giant kaiju fighting. They go up to the scientists all watching it, and they're like, another tragedy or something happening? And he's like, yeah, they're fighting right there. And he turns and goes, whoa! Like, how did you not see that driving up or walking up to them? How did you not
see the, like, I don't even know how tall he is at this point.
Yeah, because when they do show it, what they see, it is so funny. It's literally a tag team match. It's just like a giant wrestling ring match in a fire.
Another disaster?
Yes. There's another monster besides Frankenstein.
What?
And the guy just goes, oh shit, how'd I miss that? It doesn't matter. Like you said, I guess because Baragon keeps digging, that he has made an unsound structure like of the ground for the, I don't know, but he kills Baragon. But this is the craziest moment. He just grabs his scalp or hit the top of his head and rips it open. You see that he's ripping it open, exposing his brain, and Baragon just dies.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, the ground caves in slow. Very slowly.
He had time to get out of there.
And Frankenstein just goes, he rides it like a surfboard into the ground. Yeah,
it's like that moment in Terminator 2 when Arnold slowly is going into the steel, remember?
Yes.
And he just gives a thumbs up.
He could have gave a thumbs up
here. Yeah, that's pretty much what's happening here. He just lets himself go. And so
while that's happening, we see him like with his hands up in the air like, yay.
Like Rocky.
He's going into the ground. Now they cut to the three scientists, and I guess this is the moment where if King Kong would have died, you would have that amazing moment, you know, Beauty killed the Beast type of thing, or, you know, it was Beauty that killed the Beast. Here we get the worst versions of that. The girl goes, I guess he's dead now. Like, he's not even in the ground yet. And the other guy's like, but Frankenstein's heart will live forever.
Okay.
And then he's like, I think we might see him again one day. Anyways, Finn.
Oh my God. So the movie's over and literally it just says the end.
Yeah.
Like right there. So you're telling me that there is another one of these.
So next week we'll be watching the follow-up movie, War of the Gargantuans, which is actually a weird sequel of sorts.
Same actors?
No.
What?
No.
It's not Frankenstein at all?
It's apparently going to be based on it.
So he's not going to be in it.
I didn't say that. We'll have to find out next
week.
Oh,
my God. Okay. We saw that movie before.
That's sketchy. We watched this movie in a hotel somewhere while being like hungover and sobering up.
Probably,
and we don't remember it at all.
Remembering anything, yeah. All right.
I'm okay. Going to guess they say the word Frankenstein twice.
Okay.
But well, yeah, he just dies by going into the ground, and that's the end of the movie.
I gotta say, though, you know, I did not hate this movie.
As you already heard, at least I have that for my research project. After all Frankenstein's done, he'll be killed for it, I know. It's inevitable, but I'm willing to accept it.
It's not good.
I mean, it's not good, but I didn't hate it. Now, not like I hated like Showgirls or any of that. I did not hate this movie. Yes, the makeup on this actor was absolutely atrocious. It was terrible. If they can make Karloff look that good in 1931, you're telling me that they couldn't do better in this 1965 film with the makeup?
I agree.
It was almost like they put a hat on him. It wasn't, the makeup wasn't even attached to his face. Just to give him like that, you know, caveman looking brow and all that. It looked like a hat. It wasn't even attached to the makeup.
Yeah.
It was absolutely a terrible makeup job. Terrible.
I agree.
I feel like, just that aside though, I mean, I didn't hate it. I didn't hate this movie. I mean, I think it's fun to watch kaiju, you know, busting each other up and
but
stuff.
But this is one of those movies that there's a bare bones plot, and that the Frankenstein is virtually a stand-in for King Kong. And you think it could just be a King Kong scenario where Frankenstein's got to learn, they got to save him. But Baragon is just there because they want to have a kaiju film.
That's true.
And they just want to have a fight. And it does not work. It does not make sense. And the fighting is terrible.
It's true. I mean, it was a very prolonged fight between the two of them and very unepic. There was nothing there. There was really nothing to this movie. But like I said, I didn't hate it. I was able to get through it without, like, you know, getting distracted or, you know, doing a face palm or anything like that. I was able to get through it. So I want to give this a 3.
Oh, okay. That's lower than I thought, because when you were saying you kind of liked it, I thought you were going 5.
No,
and I was
like, wow. No, it's not so bad, it's good. So that would be a 4. It's bad. It's just, I didn't.
I think I might go with soap. Oh my God. I think I heard a guy too.
Jesus Christ.
Brought these to take care of him. I won't miss. You'll see what I mean.
I think I'm going to go so bad it's good. I'm going to go in the 4.
Wow.
I think I'm going to go in the 4. I don't think this is good, but I was the first half of it, the stuff with the scientist and Frankenstein, I kind of liked. It's Baragon and the complete awareness that they had no ending for this movie. And they just went, it's over. Like, they couldn't think of anything to do.
Oh, well, that's because they probably hit the runtime with that 20-minute long kaiju fight.
Yeah.
So think about that.
What I kind of read was that it was originally, like, intended to be all these different things. And so I'm like, you can completely see it. We didn't even talk about Baragon as actually making Godzilla noises.
He is. Yeah, he is. Because they don't know anything else.
And I was reading, too, like, since this was, like, a script for something else that they used, you can completely see that they maybe had an outline or an idea. And when he was forced to put Baragon into the film, you can see that the movie just ran out of steam. They were just like, get this done. And the funny part about it, the reason they told him to stick a kaiju in the movie is that the reason that America even teamed up with Japan to release this or make these movies is because the studio, they were being told, hey, we want some monster movies.
Mm-hmm.
So he actually went around and said, he asked, I guess, the Motion Picture Association. He said, who's making the biggest, the most monster movies? Who's being successful? And they said Hammer and Toho. Went to Toho, he went to Hammer, but Hammer was already had a contract with another person to release their movies from, you know, the UK.
Mm-hmm.
So he had to go to Japan. So he teamed up with them and got these movies made so he can release these movies in their theaters.
It's weird, though, because there's only one American person in this whole entire movie.
So that was a big part of it was, by teaming up with them, he was allowing it to bring American actors over.
Okay.
So each one of these movies that they produce together has an American actor in it.
Okay. Like, I get it. Yeah. Like Milton Berle and when they did, didn't they put Milton Berle in the original Godzilla?
No, Raymond Burr.
Raymond Burr. That's what I meant.
I like Milton Berle. How different that movie would have been.
It's still the same sound.
Nice. That is what you're talking about is actually what happened there is something different, because this wasn't when they teamed up and produced movies together. This was the first one that they teamed up and produced movies together.
Oh, okay.
That original Gojira that came over to America and they made into Godzilla,
mm-hmm.
they actually re-edited the film and put American actors into it with a re-editing.
Okay, you're right.
That happened again with 1985 versus 1984, which is two versions of the same movie. They just re-edited it and filmed it. I also found out, which is really funny, that this producer also got other things from Toho, and one of those things turned out to be the Woody Allen film, What's Up, Tiger Lily, which is a what the famous story there is, they took this police squad movie. There was a series of them. There was like these police movies, and they brought them over here. But when they played one in the theater, the crowd laughed at it. They thought it was terrible. So he was like, damn, how do I sell this? So they're like, what if I give this? He actually went up to Lenny Bruce and said, hey, would you want to rewrite the movie's dialogue to make another movie as a comedy? And Lenny Bruce said no. So he went up to an unknown Woody Allen at the time, and he asked Woody Allen, and Woody Allen said, yeah. So he wrote the fake dialogue for the movie, and they made it about something else, and it was supposed to be a TV movie. But what the producer didn't, he didn't know, Woody Allen didn't know, was he actually added on more. He got a famous band, Loving Spoonful, and he also added in more to put it into theaters. So he put it into theaters without even Woody Allen even knowing. So Woody Allen kind of like distanced himself from that film. But it's a famous example of Americans taking another product from another country and completely retooling it and repackaging it as their own.
Yeah.
Which is the Mighty Morphin Power Rangers is like that.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that's fascinating. But that's the only reason that these movies have like one American lead. And by the way, they did this just like the Giallo and these Italian films. Nick Adams, he's actually acting, he's speaking his actual language. So he's on set talking in American where everybody else is in Japanese.
Okay.
And so they, when they redubbed it, he got put into Japanese, of course, and they stayed the same. But when they brought it to America, they just used his actual audio.
Oh, okay.
When he was speaking.
All right. Okay.
Yeah.
So he didn't understand the actors as they were doing the scene.
But he friended them. Like, he actually had really nice things to say about the crew. So, and he said he thought the special effects that they were doing at the time was amazing. The models.
Like I said, I didn't think it was that bad. I was like, I kind of liked the way they made him look bigger.
Yeah.
You know, and they superimposed things and made miniatures. I love miniatures.
The miniature cop cars that chase him and crash into a wall actually are pretty damn fun.
Yeah. It's cute.
Yeah. And the boat that he's in the water with actually looks kind of fun, too. Yeah,
it looks fun. I mean, I like it. I didn't have a problem with that stuff. I like the tiny stuff that they use to make to make things look bigger and smaller. I love that. Set pieces and stuff.
But I definitely would go with a 4. I don't think this is a good movie, but I also didn't hate it. It's an oddity that I think will stick in my brain as the weirdest Frankenstein movie I've ever watched.
I mean, I guess you're right, but I'm not changing my score. I think 3 is perfect because there's nothing extraordinary about it at all. It's just like, okay, you know, they just threw an odd character in there to fight a kaiju. That's it. But I didn't hate it, like I said. It wasn't the worst, but there are some people on the internet that like to think that they're smarter than the rest of the people that are watching this movie because I can't even get over the 10s on here. It's like ridiculous.
I can't believe you found 10s.
There's a couple 10s. Yeah. And that brings us to our segment of why we can't have nice things, where I will read out two extremes of online reviews, a 1 10 star and a 1 1 star review, as proof that people cannot review movies and they ruin it for the rest of us. And this is a 10 out of 10, Scotty. 10 out of 10. One of the best horror movies ever. Now,
this person thinks they're reviewing another movie.
No, here's the thing. I think there might be a language barrier, so I'm going to read this exactly how it's written.
Okay, thank you.
And it's not going to make any sense to anyone at all. But here we go. Bear with me. This is a Frankenstein sequel, and it is a great film. The Frankenstein monster live into modern times. He is exposed to a nuclear bomb. He becomes a giant. He fights a dragon in this movie. This movie, great. It has a great storyline. It also has great acting. It is one of the scariest movies ever made. This movie is a must-see. Koj Furuhata is a great actor. Tadao Takashima is a great actor. This movie is very intense. This is better than The Frankenstein 1931. Frankenstein is a very scary movie. This one is scarier. Nick Adams was a great actor. Kumi Mizuno is a great actress. The Curse of Frankenstein is better, but still, this is a great horror film. 10 out of 10. That's exactly how this person wrote this.
And it was written by Frankenstein Jr.
No. I'm not going to say the person's name, but yeah, this is one of the poorest written reviews I have ever seen.
I liked it.
I read it exactly how it was written, so.
I applaud him. Or her.
I'm going to go ahead and say it was a man. I have the name of Jacob. But anyway, the one star review, bizarre and awful. Ishiro Honda directed this incredibly bizarre and perfectly awful film that starts off in World War II, where Dr. Frankenstein has been working with the Japanese and created a living heart. But it is later taken to Hiroshima, where it is irradiated by the H-bomb being dropped. Years later, that heart has somehow grown into a full-size boy, who then mutates even more into a giant man, who attacks the city, then battles a giant lizard named Baragon, also recently awakened. Preposterous story and poor effects make this a tacky and laughable effort that only gets worse as it goes along. No relation to Mary Shelley or Boris Karloff, at least.
It's funny because when you started reading that, I thought this was a 10-star review again.
Okay, well, but can we also, I'm just going to double back really quick about the 10-star review. This is not a Frankenstein sequel. Why does this person think
it can be?
It is a Frankenstein sequel.
A sequel
would mean
be.
It had to be picked up from the original.
But then we were talking about that because I said, well, are they insinuating that this heart was from the end of the movie and the body was destroyed, but the heart, they found the heart beating? That's what I was saying to you. This could be an actual sequel.
Oh, good Lord.
But yeah, I know it's bizarre.
I just can't. But this.
I like this, the opening in this review. I like their
incredibly bizarre and perfectly awful film. Like, okay, well, thanks for the recap on what we just watched, but this review is, I mean, is this really the worst thing that you have ever seen? Because if it is, I don't think you've seen many movies. Like, I just, it's not a laughable effort. It knows what it is.
Yeah.
It knows what it is, and it just goes for it. So that's the difference, like, with Toho Studios. Like, they're not apologetic about anything, and they shouldn't be, because they know what they're making. They know what they set out to make. And yeah. They've been doing these movies since the goddamn 50s. So, like, give them some goddamn credit. Yeah. Really. You know, these people are so harsh. It's ridiculous. This is 1965. They knew exactly what they were doing. So, you're going to call this movie preposterous? Yes, they know it is. They know it's preposterous, but they're having a good freaking rootin' tootin' good time making it.
Yeah.
So why should you shit all over their project? You know, like I said, this isn't the worst thing I've ever seen. It wasn't good, but it knew what it was. It's a solid 3 in my book. And I did not hate my time watching it. Like, I was literally just jumping out of my skin just to have Showgirls be done. It was not that bad. Or the Star Wars, you know, holiday special. I really just wanted to run out of my own house because I didn't want to watch that shit anymore.
Yeah.
This is not that.
Yeah, I feel like, I think that's why I'm going high as I am with it, because I do think it's something there that is, like, stupid fun. And I, like you said, I don't want to really go, like, destroy it. But it does have problems. It is crazy. It is a mess in some areas. But I do think that it's quaint and funny and just like a bizarre take on the whole mythos. You know, like, you're going to see all the sequels to the Boris Karloff one, you know, yeah. the James Whale.
Yeah.
And you're going to see all those crazy takes off that movie. And we've seen a lot. This is one of the craziest ideas ever. And I give them credit for even trying to go this nuts with it. So I don't know. I think that something about it makes me kind of like it in that sense. But as the Toho movies go, yeah, this is the least enjoyable, one of the least enjoyable ones I've
seen.
It's
at the bottom. Yeah. It's at the bottom for sure.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, I it is, unfortunately.
Yeah. So that's all I got. I mean, like, it's a thing we did.
I guess it is. I guess it is a thing we did.
It is a thing we did.
It is the start of Kaiju Month.
I'm excited about this month.
I if this is a start, I'm pretty happy.
You better not make me watch the one with Booger. I'm out.
No, we don't have anything like that. We're actually, and I'm going to say this, we're actually going to do three movies from the same director. And from
Honda.
Yeah. Okay, I got three movies from him around the same time. And I have never seen these movies before. Well, the second one is like iffy. I feel like we have seen some of it, but I don't remember the damn thing. Yeah. But they're interesting ones, and I'm looking forward to them because I think they're so strange. And they're all under a six. They're all in the fives or the fours.
Okay.
So it makes sense, and that's why I picked them all. But it's rare that I haven't seen some Toho movies.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad that they're ones that we haven't seen or we don't remember seeing, because, like, there's some that I just can't watch again. You know, I don't like the son of Godzilla, who I refer to as Booger. He looks like a booger. I can't look at him. It's too cartoony for me.
And I actually wanted to do one of those movies. I wanted to do a Godzilla film this month, but I found a whole bunch of ones we've never seen, so I figured we'd go that way. For November, which is our Turkey Fest, which bad movies that we kind of love, I actually wanted to do the Son of Godzilla.
Ugh.
Because it makes me laugh.
Ugh, it's dreadful.
It is pretty bad, and it makes me laugh every time I see it. Maybe
I'll have some alcohol before.
It's definitely not. I'm not doing it, but it was very big into consideration the last 2 years.
Okay.
Instead, we did Megalon, Godzilla versus Megalon, which is one of my favorites with Jet Jaguar. God. We did that last time.
Yeah.
The beginning.
I think I might pick Megaguirus. I like Megaguirus.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. All right. Anyways,
that's it. All right. So, thanks for listening, as always. I would love to hear if you're a big Frankenstein versus Baragon fan, if you've seen this movie. Because when I saw 2,500 reviewers did this movie or reviewed this movie, I was kind of shocked. And I'd love to see those people. I'd like to hear from anybody who's ever seen this or is into it or has suggestions for other kaiju movies we've never heard of. Love to hear that too. Hit us up on Instagram at Just Another Movie Night and Joe at The Crafty Misfit. I'd love to hear any of those picks, themes, anything. We'd love to hear, what's your worst movie? I'd love to hear that. So until next time, thanks for listening. Have a good one. Bye.
Frankenstein is finally dead.
He can't die. His heart will live on forever. One day again, we will hear of him.
He may be better off now. He couldn't live in this world.
But we've saved his hand. As you already heard, at least I have that for my research project.